Brother Elvin Jones, brother to Hank Jones, who's on piano, keeping things nice and tight. They are of the prominent Jones boys from Detroit, with a nifty little tune called 6 and 4. Art Davis is on bass. This is Lead Stories. Oh, I should mention, this is from their 1958 album, The Big Beat. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we're talking about the desecration of legacies, long established. And we'll be talking also about the city of Flint ratcheting things up on homeowners there. On June the 8th, Medgar Evers College holds its commencement ceremony, and its choice of keynote speaker, who also is to be conferred an honorary doctorate, is Hillary Clinton, as we had announced to you some time ago. This is so pathetic. I don't know what else to do, but you just have to chuckle sometimes. In irony, the announcement has not yet been made publicly, but already there is a backlash against President Rudy Cruz's action. And we are going to be talking a bit about that today, how people are mobilizing against Hillary Clinton and saying that they will not tolerate her at the commencement. Joining me now is a parent of two students set to graduate on June the 8th, and who, along with her two children, are part of the protest movement that has begun and that is building. I'm delighted to welcome her to the program today. Thanks so much, Marie Saint-Jean, for being with us today.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm hanging in. I'm drawing my strength from you.
Yeah.
So, Marie, why are you involved in this protest? What is it about? Could you tell us?
Well, I join a group named Komokoda Against Dictator in Haiti. So, a lot of things Clinton family do to Haiti, we don't appreciate it. And now, for this election past year, we protest because we have two bad people, so the people decide to take one of the bad ones who don't kill the children yet. That's why we have that president now. So beyond that, I have my children go to school here, try to give them what I don't have. You understand? Mm-hmm. If I don't have a level of high education, I try for my children to have it. So now I hear Mrs. Clinton go and speak for them. I don't want her as a role model for my kids. And a lot of parents protest against that. They don't like that. So that's why we went to the college, Medgar Evers College. You know what Medgar stand for. They have a lot of black, well-educated people who can come to speak for her children. So today I heard Mr. Crew, whatever his name, choose Hillary Clinton to revive her, speak for her children. We say no, we don't want that.
Is it widely known? I mean, or is it just a few people know so far that Hillary Clinton is scheduled to give the commencement speech and also to receive an honorary doctorate?
No, I don't think a few people know because it's on Facebook, it's on the it's online. Everybody see it. I mean, not like everybody know about computers. We have some holders who don't go to computers, but a lot of people know, because when we was protesting from the building, a lot of students support us. A lot of people who work there agree with us. A lot of other organization was there with us. It's not only Komoko that was there. A lot of organization was there. They don't want Hillary. They have to cancel that, or we're going to be inside and outside that graduation day.
What are you? Did you have any meetings at all with Dr. Crew himself?
Well, we sent a message to Mr. Crew, and we saw him, and there he ran. Channel 12 catch him, because we have a couple media was there. So we send the message to him, and he know that.
You asked the president of the college to meet with you as a parent of two students graduating, and others also asked to meet with him, Dr. Rudy Crew, who is the president of the college. And instead he runs away, and nobody has anybody in any official capacity yet responded to the concerns of your group and others now very concerned about Hillary Clinton's appearance at the commencement exercise.
No, nobody contact us yet. That's why today we urge everybody, they can call Mr. Crew, Woody Crew, on 718-270-5000. And also they can call Melly Cam, 646-664-9100. Once again, 646-664-9100. Everybody can call them, say, no, we don't want her to speak for her children because she's a liar. She don't tell the truth. I don't want that as my children's role model.
What do you think is, apart from what you say about the Clintons and their connection to Haiti, and the wrong things that occurred in Haiti, for which you are correct, I think, and all groups are correct to protest that, because we covered Mrs. Clinton and her husband, and missing a lot of missing money from Haiti. But how do you get people to understand how important it is to make it known that even if the president of the college goes along with this and brings her to the college and to give the commencement speech and to accept this honorary doctorate, that you will continue, no matter what, to let it be known that she has a very bad history in Haiti that people should know about?
Well, I think they know. They play like they don't know, but they know. For Haiti, they know it's not me say it, it's not you say it. It's on all over the social media. So they know. The Clinton, he's the president in Haiti right now. He pretend like he love us. That's why he do his honeymoon when he was married with Hillary. He love Haiti. But that's not true. Because for 100,000 years, they say Haiti is the poorest country. But it's not true, because we have a lot of gold, more petrol than Venezuela. They don't want people to know. So today, if I come out and say they steal her money, they go and say, these people crazy, they are poor. Where they find money for Bill Clinton to steal? No. If you are a millionaire now, you want to do business in Haiti, you have to check with Clinton. If you don't check with Clinton, you cannot do no business in Haiti right now, because he's the president of Haiti. Hillary, Chelsea, you see? So Mr. Crew and all his colleagues know what Clinton do to not only Haiti, to a lot of other countries. So they pretend like they don't know. You know, money involved. She, to me, she's dead now. They want to bring her back to life. That's why they invite her to come speak for her children. So we say no to that.
Do your children feel the same way?
Yeah, they feel the same way. Even they tell me, even some of teachers, when they pop up on the internet, Hillary picture come up, everybody was shocked. I say, what they say? They say, oh, no, we don't want her there. But, you know, to protect their job, they can't say it loud. I don't know. Me, I don't scare nothing. I have to say what hurt me. You understand? They don't want to mess with Clinton. Yeah, they don't want to mess with Clinton family. But me, I come from Haiti. We are the first black independent. So I feel like Dessalines blood in me. I don't have to be scared to say whatever hurt me. I have to say it. If you don't say it, how you go and find medication to heal your bad thing? I have to say it. They're scared.
Let's repeat the numbers, because apparently there are people interested in helping and joining this effort to bring attention to the fact that Dr. Rudy Crew, the president of Medgar Evers College. And, I mean, nobody really knew that this was happening.
I hope nobody, they know today.
Nobody knew that he had made arrangements, or arrangements were made for Mrs. Clinton to arrive at the commencement on June the 8th. What are the numbers people can call to register their outrage about it? And what is the number for your organization in case they can't get through?
Yes. They can call. We need a lot of brothers and sisters to come to support us. So they can call the school at 718-270-5000. Once again, Rudy Crew, 718-270-5000. Let's say it like that. And they can call Rudy Boss, Mellencamp, 646.
This is the chancellor of the city university system.
Yes. 646-664-9100. And also, they can call Komokoda, 347-262-5204.
Could you repeat that?
347-262-5204. Dawood Andre, they can call in.
All right, so we know that this is in formation. Quite a few community grassroots groups have already assembled and have indicated that they support the effort to make sure that Hillary Clinton does not appear. And to call attention to the fact that her very appearance, by permission of Rudy Crew, the president of the college, is a slap in the face of the memory of Medgar Evers, who, in whose name this college was formed. And her standards are so far beneath his, and it is an insult to the community at large. So one more time, let's get the numbers going so that people can begin to call and get directions from you as to what they can do to help.
Yes. 347-262-5204. And they can also call the school directly. Say no to that disaster. Because if Medgar is in life today, he going to be very upset because he don't build that school for that. 718-270-5000. That's Woody Koo. And Millie Cam, 646-664-9100.
And Coma Coda is the name of the organization that you are affiliated with, and which is beginning to rally the community around this issue. What is the contact number for Coma Coda?
Yes, contact number for Coma Coda is 347-262-5204. You can call on that number. You get any information you need.
Well, I want to thank you for giving us this bit of information. It gets us started, and it gets people connected with the organization and with the school to register their displeasure about having Hillary Clinton address the commencement and to receive an honorary degree from Medgar Evers College on June the 8th. Thank you so much for being with us today.
That's correct. Thank you very much. We expect everybody to be there. We go and be at the school every day until the graduation day. And the graduation go and be at Barclay Center, downtown Brooklyn. That day we go and be inside and outside. We expect to see everybody who against that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Now, in 2 days, May 10th, Bethune-Cookman University, a historically black university in Daytona Beach, Florida, holds its spring commencement. The send-off message to graduates will be delivered by Betsy DeVos, the vacuous Secretary of Education, whose top priority is to dismantle and destroy public education. Now, what is interesting here is that President Rudy Crewe of Medgar Evers replaced the person who now is the president of Bethune-Cookman University, and that's Edison Jackson. The students at Bethune-Cookman University are already in mobilization mode. They think it is offensive. They were not informed until recently, and they don't want Betsy DeVos there. They think it is a slap, a direct slap in the face of the founder of Bethune-Cookman University. I should say the founders, because it actually is a merged institution, Cookman College and Bethune University. So they have begun to mobilize, and it's going to be a showdown of sorts. The president of the college, Edison Jackson, has really just rejected any idea of meeting with the students. So Betsy DeVos is going to make a commencement speech at a college that she really isn't welcomed at, certainly not in terms of the student body. So we have here a very interesting thing. And we have to ask questions now. My thinking is the students would have had some say in who will deliver the commencement address. But if you're not asked, if you're not invited to the process, if behind your back and the backs of faculty and community people, a private arrangement was made to satisfy a political agenda, which is to humanize this administration and, of course, its appointee, Miss Betsy DeVos, who's dedicated, that's her top priority, is to dismantle and destroy public education. But the moment she appears at this commencement, those sins will be washed away. There will be a big photo op, and she will be cleansed of her many sins. She has absolutely no experience in the field of education except as a so-called philanthropist who sees that this is the right opportunity in under the Trump administration to make public schools into charter schools and to make those chartered schools citadels of good Christian values. Now, just yesterday, President Trump seemed to backpedal on a statement that he made earlier on that gave the impression that he wasn't to, you know, he wasn't to be counted on in terms of supporting historically black colleges and universities. So a statement was put out yesterday in which Trump says, well, of course he is absolutely supportive of HBCUs. Yes, he had to read the obligatory statement saying that any funds allocated to historically black colleges and universities will observe the law and will be consistent with the Constitution. We know what that language says. That language says, this is not written in stone. This is not written in stone. So we have two interesting dynamics operating, but with the same intention of being used to revive and, in some cases, to invent some kind of standards for the people involved. Because they blew that a long time ago. But the question is, aren't we beyond this business yet? That we have these miscreant leaders who are so powerless, who are so weak and weak-minded, that they would allow just about anything to happen. They would just leave the legacies of these colleges wide open to exploitation by some of the most repulsive people that we have had to deal with in recent memory. Hillary Clinton delivering a commencement speech, and then on top of that, getting an honorary doctorate from a college named after Medgar Evers. And all of this is done on the shady, you know, the kind of the shuffling They didn't announce it fully because they knew there would be a dramatic response. They knew that. Where did the money come from? Of course, they'll say, well, no money is involved at all. Sure. But it just so happens that this commencement speech is so badly needed to restore the wretched Mrs. Clinton to some degree of respectability. And it is curious how, when they want to clean themselves up, they can always find willing people to do it. I want to read you an excerpt of an article. And, I lost it. So I think I should find it again. I lost it temporarily there. I can't, my hands is not moving fast enough, but I found it. What does the article say? I'm just going to read it. We'll get back to it on another day. But this was an article that appeared last week. It says, the headline says, new emails show Clinton Foundation and State Department Haiti links. It appeared in the Caribbean News Now. The article says, Washington-based watchdog group Judicial Watch has released 894 pages of new U.S. Department documents, including previously unreleased email exchanges between former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's staff and Clinton Foundation officials following the massive earthquake in Haiti in 2010. On January the 17th, 2010, 5 days after the earthquake, former Bill Clinton aide Justin Cooper emailed Hillary Clinton's then Deputy Chiefs of Staff, Jake Sullivan and Huma Abedin, to ask if they can do a conference call to discuss Haiti. Clinton Foundation officials Laura Graham and Doug Band are also provided also provided the call-in information for the conference call. Author Peter Schweitzer later described in his book, Clinton Cash, how millions of dollars in U.S. taxpayer-funded reconstruction contracts for Haiti flowed through the Clinton Foundation during Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State. How much money? Billions of dollars. I was going to say hundreds of millions, but that would have been an underestimate. It is about between $6 and $10 billion just for the reconstruction projects alone, over which Bill Clinton had exclusive authority. And nobody knows where that money went. And this was while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. So you could understand why people are miffed about it, especially those in the Haitian community, but not exclusively so. African Americans have every right to be completely insulted by this, that somebody so undesirable is being given a privilege to address a commencement, and on top of that, to receive an honorary doctorate in a college named after Medgar Evers. So we will be following this. We certainly will. Right now, I want to switch to another atrocity occurring in Flint, Michigan. And in Flint, Michigan, we have the government of Flint, Michigan, acting like a thug and getting away with it. What are they doing? Well, our guest is here to tell us what they're doing, investigative reporter Kurt Guyette. He was the person who broke the story about the dirty, toxic water in Flint. that had affected so many thousands and thousands of people, and especially children in Flint, and it has not yet been rectified fully, only authenticated. Kurt Guyatt is a reporter with the ACLU of Michigan, and as I said, he broke the story about Flint, Michigan's super toxic water system. Kurt, first of all, welcome. Glad to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me back.
Listen, what is going on there? What is the Flint government doing?
Well, one thing that they're doing is they recently sent out notices to more than 8,000 residences, telling them that if they didn't pay their back water and sewer bills, that a lien was going to be placed on their property, which is an action that could lead to foreclosures of homes. So the water in Flint has still not been deemed to be in compliance with federal clean water standards. And so water that is still not considered safe to drink, people are still expected to pay for. In fact, up until February, the state had been subsidizing a portion of people's water bills. They stopped that in February, so people are being faced with their full bills. And if they are unable to pay for water that is still not safe to drink, then they're at risk of losing their homes. Other people are starting to have their water shut off. So that's the most pressing recent thing that is going on.
How could this possibly be allowed? The people cannot drink the water. The water has been certified as undrinkable in its current form because it is flowing through corroded pipes and the corroded water system. It has been found to have unreasonable levels of lead and other toxins. And so the city says, well, pay for it anyway. And if you don't pay for it, we'll take your house.
What, therefore,
is the remedy? What remedies are available to people, homeowners, who find themselves in this situation?
Well, there is some help from charities available to provide financial assistance. But part of the problem goes to the fact that Flint used to be 200,000 residents. Now it's fewer than 100,000 residents. And it used to be the home of General Motors. A lot of auto plants have closed down. So they have a water system that is way over capacity. And, 40% of people in Flint live below the poverty line. So the money is just not there. And the whole water infrastructure is crumbling. And it was in bad shape before the crisis. It's in even worse shape now because the corrosive water, the corrosive river water that was not treated with mandatory corrosion controls, according to one expert, took about a dozen years off of the life of the water infrastructure over the 18 months that the untreated river water was being used. So it just went in and started chewing things apart. And one of the consequences is that about half of the water that Flint is paying for never actually makes it to a person's home. It's lost to leakage in the system. But that water is being paid for by residents in the big picture. It's part of the bill. And so whether it's used or not, the town is still paying for, and that's adding to the burden, paying for water that never gets to be used because the system is in such so decrepit and in such disrepair. And that problem is not unique to Flint. It's also happening in Detroit. In Detroit, the latest numbers are that there's 18,000 homes in Detroit that are in threat of having their water shut off. And also in Detroit, they do the same thing that is happening in Flint, which is unpaid water bills get put on people's taxes and are in threat of losing their homes. There's tens of thousands of homes in Detroit every year that get essentially confiscated by the government for failure to pay property taxes. So, you know, this is a huge issue, not just in Flint and not just in Detroit. The rising water rates are leading to increasing shutoffs and increasing foreclosures in lots of cities, especially older cities with high populations of poor people.
So these people who for so many months now have had to buy water to drink,
right,
to sometimes to bathe in, because the water is just so caustic that people dare not chance even using it to bathe. So how do they get some kind of a write-off, or how do they get a discount? Let's assume that they're even willing to pay. Is this factor taken into consideration, that all these months they have had to buy water or get it somehow? They certainly are not getting it from the city. The city's system is corroded. So what are the chances for them in some way to alleviate the financial burden that they now face and the very real threat of losing their homes over the fact that they refuse to pay for water they can't use?
Yeah, it's up until February, the state was subsidizing, I think it was somewhere around 67% of a homeowner's water bill was being subsidized by the state. And what they did was they sort of calculated what percentage of people of water would people normally consume versus water used to flush toilets or things like that. And which struck me as sort of bizarre when I first heard Governor Snyder talk about that at the congressional hearings last year. You know, they put so much effort into, like, fine-tuning exactly how much they would subsidize. If they would have put that much thought into the whole issue beforehand, they would have never had the problem to begin with. But even at that, those subsidies stopped in February, and people were on their own. The state is saying that testing shows that now that the water is being properly treated, now that they are no longer using the river water, the water is again coming from the regional system that used to be run by Detroit and now has been turned over to a regional water authority, that because it's a less corrosive and because it's being properly treated, lead levels are coming down. And because lead levels are coming down, there's no longer need for the states to subsidize it, even though it has still not passed all the tests required for the state and city to be able to say the water's in compliance with federal clean water standards, and that people still need to either use a filter to be able to drink the water, or to get bottled water. And there's still water distribution systems, bottled water distribution systems in place. But that's a sort of a long and not very clear answer to your question, which is essentially people are being said, you know, pay up or suffer the consequences. And it's as simple as that.
Is the ACLU taking any legal action here in terms of a class action lawsuit saying that the state is acting illegally?
Well, we had a major lawsuit that was recently settled that the state agreed to and now is going to be enforced by the court, guaranteed funding to the tune of $87 million to replace all the lead service lines going to residences in the city and to provide other help. So that's now a court order. So before it was a promise with no real backing to it. Now they agreed and the court is enforcing that they have to do that. We also have a lawsuit around education where we are seeking to get a commitment from the state to provide all the educational services and wraparound services necessary to mitigate to the full extent the damages lead has done to Flint's school children. And the state is fighting us on that. And it's a rather bizarre situation because at the same time the state is fighting us on that, and the state is also fighting a class action lawsuit that we're not involved in. They are attempting to prosecute the people that the state is alleging are responsible for this water crisis. So on the one hand, they're trying to prosecute people, and on the other hand, they're trying to defend against all these various lawsuits. There's multiple private lawsuits that have been launched, but one of them is a class action lawsuit that thousands of people have signed on to that is attempting to get some compensation for all the damage that's been done. There's been physical harm done to people, but there's been harm done to their property values, but there's also been harm done to things like water heaters and washing machines and, mm-hmm. and dishwashers. All that corrosive water just wrecked havoc with all sorts of things, including the plumbing and appliances in people's homes. You see photos all the time that people show, like how their plumbing was just corroded at an accelerated degree because of what the city and state were doing. And, you know, people talk about having to replace one and then another water heater because of the damage done. And so the state is fighting that. I was at a meeting recently, and one of the lawyers talked about like the blizzard of motions that the state keeps filing in order to slow down the process and drive up the cost and time that lawyers representing Flint residents are having to put into this effort to seek compensation for all the damage done to them.
Well, this is a massive offense. This is massive ecological disaster occurring here. What do you think is the role played by race and class?
I'm sorry. Would you repeat that question?
Could you address the issue of the role of race and class? In terms of the response of the state authorities, the local authorities, the lack of speed in getting things done, and still these draconian measures that they're taking, trying to take people's houses. They did the same thing in Detroit.
Yes. There was recently the Michigan Civil Rights Commission recently released a report after a year-long investigation talking about the role that various forms of racism played in the Flint crisis. The one of the things that's come out is a letter from an official in the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency saying, is Flint really the kind of place that we want to go out on a limb for? And, you know, that kind of place being a place with high poverty, and a majority of residents are African American. You know, the governor is a Republican. There's not a lot of Republican votes up in a city like Flint. You know, it's a staunchly Democratic city. Like all the cities and school districts that were taken over by the state through this draconian emergency manager law that Michigan has. And Flint, even though the emergency manager is no longer in place, is not really a place where that has full democracy to this day, because when the emergency manager leaves, something called a receivership transition advisory board is put in place, and that advisory board has final say over Flint's budget. The mayor and city council can pass a budget, but this advisory board can say, no, this budget's not acceptable, and we reject it and send them back to the drawing board. They also have approval over major contracts. So Flint is a place, really, where it's still democracy has not been restored. And that emergency manager law has also been cited as a major cause for the crisis in the first place. A task force appointed by the governor himself identified the governor's emergency manager law as a primary factor leading to the crisis.
Do you think at any time, even if they move on the business of the water system itself, and, you know, they accelerate that, what do you think would be the plight of people, let's say, on fixed incomes, the elderly and so forth, having to replace water heaters that just blew up? Or you talk about dishwashers, and some may even have car trouble because the water was deemed too corrosive for the local auto plant to use. So what do you think are the chances that they would speed things up, or that special arrangements and consideration will be given to people who are elderly and sick, people who are taking care of children who have been so affected that the family has run out of resources to do anything else?
Well, boy, you know, now they're being forced to rely on charity, because the government is not stepping in to address the issues. You know, the government's role is pay up or get your water shut off, pay up or we're going to take your house. So it is through really charities is kind of where they're being forced to turn to at this point.
Is there any organization or grassroots movement organized around this to rally in behalf of the affected people in Flint?
Yes, there is. As a matter of fact, one of the things that's happening right now is, in the very early stages, an attempt to recall the newly elected mayor, or not newly elected, but certainly new since the water crisis began. Because one of the things that happened was that there was a town hall meeting put on by the city and state, and was held in a church, and people were arrested for disorderly conduct, and part of the issues was whether people not taking off their hats while in the church. You know, it's just, and the current mayor was elected because she was opposed to the previous mayor, who was in office when this crisis began and assured people that the water was safe when it wasn't. And so the new mayor was supposed to have, you know, be the people's mayor in essence, but there's been at least a fair amount of dissatisfaction with her so far. You know, she was there when people were being arrested at this town hall meeting, and is saying that it doesn't look like there's anything that she can do to prevent the shutoffs or the foreclosures. So the people of Flint have been awakened. They came together to fight the water crisis initially and were instrumental in led a citizen-led testing to that proved that the lead levels in the water were much higher than what the city and state were claiming, and they're continuing to be very, very active in trying to get justice in all sorts of ways.
Well, thanks, Kurt, for bringing us up to speed on what's happening in Flint. What's next for you in terms of writing? What are you writing about now about Flint?
You know, I've been following this issue, but I just did a pretty major piece that was a cover story in the Metro Times alternative paper here in Detroit called Tunnel Vision, which takes a look at the roots of the crisis in Flint, because Flint just so marked its the third year anniversary on April 24th. 5th was the third year anniversary of when the switchover was made from the Detroit system to the using the river water, and as part of recognizing that, we did a major story looking at the roots of the crisis. So if your listeners are interested, if they go to the MetroTimes.com and do a search for Tunnel Vision, they'll be able to find that story, which has a lot of interesting information in it, I think.
Thanks for bringing us up to speed on what's happening. And, of course, we'll be in touch. And don't wait for me to call. You can let any time you need to something worthy to be reported, please do give me a call.
Okay.
But thanks. Yep. Thanks so
Thank
much
you
again,
for your
Kurt.
Continued interest.
Thank you.
Okay.
Wow. Now, this, just to put this in perspective, we're talking about, it's a small city, but it's still 100,000 people. And they're getting away with this kind of outrageous behavior. They'll take your house. So that what we have now is a subtext. And you will recall we talked a lot about this in terms of the so-called bankruptcy of Detroit. The idea in enforcing these arbitrary and unfair and illegal laws is to get people out of their houses. In as much as they're fixing the water system, and having to replace, they have to be ordered by the court to do it. It means that Flint actually is in transition. It is being prepared for the new people. The old Flint residents are going to have to find their own way someplace else. And that's how Detroit, in recent years, just a couple of last years, where you have literally a brand new landscape, a brand new city, because with the systematic emptying, whether by design or whether by coincidence, the fact is, they're getting people out of their houses and taking the house and the land under it. If you take the house, you have the land under it. And that's the basis of all the stuff that's going on, the reallocation of the land, moving the people out, taking the land and reimagining, as they had said at this big news conference, reimagining Detroit. It's reimagined now. It's well on its way, minus black people. Flint will go through the same thing. It's well on its way. So we got to wake up. We have to wake up. And I do remind you that one of the most senior members of Congress is from Detroit, John Conyers. Well, thanks for listening. I hope we learned something today. But let me just remind you of these numbers, because what we want to do, we want to support the grassroots community fighting this horrible development at Medgar Evers College. Rudy Crew, the president of Medgar Evers College, can be reached at 718-270-5000 to express your views about this. The Chancellor, James Milliken, can be reached at 646-664-9100. 646-664-9100. And we need to support the people who are taking the initiative and literally taking the lead on this. We need to fall in line and support them, because in the end, they're fighting a just cause. They're fighting for a just cause. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. And as always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.